Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Hey everyone, welcome to the perpetually untitled Waypoint Rewatch Podcast. We thought we had a title. We felt good about it. Be Kind Rewatch felt joyous in a way that made us feel good.
Y'all came up with it. Somebody wrote in, and that's when I knew, like, this is our title.
This is it.
But somebody.
But as it turns out, that title is already taken, which makes sense because it's a good title. And
it is. I am now getting, here's the wild thing.
Riddle
YouTube
me
is
piss.
Now recommending me Be Kind Rewatch videos on YouTube. Because I clicked on
just
one.
Rubbing it in.
Oh, God.
It's great. Thank you.
So we're kicking off whatever this series will be titled at some point by watching the entirety of James DeMonaco's Purge series. It's pretty, I think, underrated, despite the fact that they're pretty well known, or at least underrated in terms of sort of critically what they contain. It's a series infused with a lot of like really striking political imagery and messaging. And we walked through the first movie, The Purge, in the previous episode. And now we're going to walk through the sequel, The Purge Anarchy, which most of them came out a year after one another. There was a year gap in between, I believe, the third and the fourth one. But this one came a year after. These movies, finished shooting in February and came out in July.
This is a Blumhouse movie,
good.
Right?
Yeah, Blumhouse, which movies, is so. a production company that you should go read about. They're fascinating. They make movies for really cheap very quickly, and lots of them you never hear about because they get buried on streaming services, and then a couple like The Purge do really well. So to talk about The Purge Anarchy, I'm joined by nearly a full crew, Danielle Riendo.
Hi, hello.
Rob Zachney.
Hey, what's up, everybody?
Natalie Watson.
Hi.
And Austin Walker.
It's me. That's
who's
Austin.
Got a camera now?
I do. And it's not haunted, hopefully.
Yeah, the last Purge cast, we had an issue.
Yeah, I bought a new camera. Shout out to Logitech. They didn't give me the camera. I spent $60.
That's not... And that camera's not haunted yet, but it's going to see some things.
Ooh. Mm-hmm.
Ooh.
Spooky.
So we're going to spoil all of The Purge Anarchy, so be forewarned up front. Before we get into it, I'm going to kind of set up sort of where we're at with the movie. I thought about just playing a trailer, but we'll have to get into a trailer. The trailers, as it turns out, are their own thing, as Austin discovered, like, literally right before we started recording. So we'll actually get into that because there are some political... Not so much subtext in those trailers. So The Purge Anarchy takes place 6 years into the Purge cycle. Like, you know, crime is down, yada, yada. The movie shifts perspectives pretty radically. In the first movie, we're focusing on sort of a rich, deeply entitled family trying to insulate themselves from the side effects of purging while quietly taking advantage of the way it punishes certain classes of marginalized folks. And in this movie, we open, you know, on families of color. The underclass, the Purge, is specifically meant to target in the name of getting crime down and economics. These people don't have, like, in the massive metal shutters to protect themselves. They're huddled into tiny apartments in broken down neighborhoods. They're hammering wood and nails into their doors and windows by hand. These are people that don't have the luxury of wondering, well, maybe we should have a weapon in the house. Like, they have to have a weapon in the house because these are the kinds of areas where people are going to go out of their way to target them. Like, these people are largely defenseless and just kind of hoping they get lucky enough to get through the night. There's sort of three sets of characters that we're dealing with. There's a young couple on the verge of telling everyone they're breaking up, in which the dude is clearly an asshole. their car breaks. Yeah, he's bad.
Shane
sucks. Yeah,
I love him so. Shane. It's great because I love him so much in Friday Night Lights, and then here he is just the worst. Their car breaks down to the side of the road, and they're sort of forced to wander in the streets. In our Rob Zachney corner, we'll discuss the weird way people choose not to prepare for this annual event.
Gotta get to Whole Foods before the Purge.
Rob,
like, my
Rob,
God.
You get, Rob, You'll get your moment. Don't worry. The house defenses, and then you'll get your strategy corner. There's a mother and daughter who narrowly escaped the invasion of their apartment complex by heavily armed individuals, and then they are rescued by sort of a Punisher-like vigilante who were previously seen sort of aimlessly wandering the streets of Los Angeles, like mostly observing. His motivations kind of become more clear over the course of the movie. So before we unpack like a bunch of what's happening in this film, I kind of just wanted to just kind of generally throw it out there. It's a huge genre shift. It's a huge sort of tonal shift. But Natalie, like, what did you take away from the second film?
It was interesting to me, mostly just how different the framing of the movie was to the actual experience of watching it, which I feel like has probably a lot to do with why they're so underappreciated, because the framing of the movie is not a movie I'd want to watch in terms of like the trailers that came out, which like you mentioned earlier. And then also it's interesting that the film is titled The Purge Anarchy, because I wonder how much the concept of anarchism is like the actual ideology of anarchism is in this movie, and how much of it is like well represented, because I think anarchy is kind of being supplemented by, or at least is another word for chaos almost in a lot of people's understanding of it, and a lot of people's, if they don't understand like the actual political ideology of anarchism. So
it
I feel like
it just sounds violent to them.
It just sounds yeah, violent. Yeah. It sounds chaotic. It sounds like out of control. It sounds individualistic, which is not what happens in this movie, and is also not what anarchism is actually about. So yeah, those were kind of
not a lot of Bakhtin like quotes in this movie. And yet, well, there actually might there, I have to go back and check over what Carmelo says to make sure that we're not being slyly given some secret political philosophy quotes slipped in there.
I think there's definitely some like hints of at least like radicalism in what Carmelo says is very radical and is very, you know, anti-establishment, anti-government, anti-institutional powers. And yeah, Danielle, I was literally just about to read a little passage from Kim Kelly, who is a writer at Noisy, also writes for Teen Vogue. And she wrote a piece called Everything You Should Know About Anarchism. And I just wanted to read a quick definition of anarchism, because I think it would be helpful to this conversation. In her words, anarchism is a radical revolutionary leftist political philosophy that advocates for the abolition of government, hierarchy, and all other unequal systems of power. It seeks to replace what its proponents view as inherently oppressive institutions, like a capitalist society or the prison industrial complex, with non-hierarchical horizontal structures powered by voluntary associations between people. Anarchists organize around a key set of principles, including horizontalism, mutual aid, autonomy, solidarity, direct action, and direct democracy, a form of democracy in which the people make decisions themselves via consensus, as opposed to representative democracy, of which the United States government is an example. So that I want to watch Carmelo's movie. It's really the thing.
Yeah.
Is after seeing that first piece, I was like, oh God, his first sort of introduction to in the film, I was like, I hope he's in here. Like, I really, really hope that we get like the deep dive into Carmelo, which we
no,
don't.
He's like a superhero.
He makes the most of every scene 100%. He is in, though. Let it be like Michael K. Williams is a terrific actor, but let it, like, these movies show any actor given a scene chewing B movie role will relish to just just, God, he just rolls around in this role. There's a clip that we'll get to. Like, we'll just, after we do our first thoughts, maybe we'll just transition to him, because there's a clip I have of when he does his entrance towards the end of the movie that is just chef's kiss is beautiful.
Yeah, absolutely.
He just feels like an FMV video game where they got like one named actor that you'll recognize, but like they couldn't make shooting dates work, so mostly they just take shots like on a soundstage and are just like, you know what, explore
just,
the space.
Just say whatever you want.
Just like give it everything you got.
He's a great scarf.
Natalie had mentioned the marketing thing. Like, Austin, as we transition to asking you about your thoughts, like, do you want to touch on like the weirdness of the marketing of this movie? Because I don't watch the trailers for a lot of these films because I just kind of pick up on the buzz and then I just jump into them.
Right.
So I never watch these, and these trailers are fucking wild.
That first trailer is why I probably never watched these movies, right? Which is like, so, as you said, this film is interesting because it shifts the perspective away from the middle-class white family. It establishes, like, it opens on Latinx, like, food service workers.
Who needs a raise, because she needs medicine for her father.
For her dying father. She is, she's like a waitress who is being sexually harassed at work. Like, immediately, this is a film that is about, and at home. Yeah, absolutely.
Everywhere she goes.
Yep. On the street constantly. It's like that is what this film actually is. And I don't know that it sticks the landing, let's say. Like there's still lots of stuff to work through.
It poses a lot of questions. It doesn't necessarily come with answers.
Totally. But that's not how this movie was sold, especially initially. The first trailer only focuses on Shane and what is his girlfriend's name?
I can pull it up.
White girl.
I can name every other character. It's like, unlike Liz. The last one, I can tell you, Liz, right. Liz. I can name Eva and Callie and everybody else, but I couldn't name Liz. It's just Shane and Liz, and they're like going on a twee drive in the summer sun, and it's just like they're in the LA sprawl, and oh no, dangerous people.
Wearing the J.Crew collection.
I thought it was a parody 100%. Trailer, honestly. Like remember that Shining remix where it's different? Yeah, I thought like... Oh, Austin, I think you're a little too
fabulous. No, that is the first trailer they released for this thing, was just look at these whites being terrorized. And that is how I thought the Purge, that's what I thought the Purge movies were until election year, at which point I was like, wait a second, is this, what is the series? And so, I think that... the second trailer, I think, does a better job of being like, oh, here are the characters. It's still a little more focused on the Punisher figure, the sergeant as the name of the character in this movie. But I think the movie is also kind of more focused on him by the end, so that's maybe fair. But that first look at it is definitely what I thought. And so coming into it, I was surprised to see that shift in perspective. But I felt that the movie was conflicted over which of its kind of two identities it wanted to have. On one hand, it wanted to talk about how the there are people on the margins who in any great change and any socioeconomic shift are the people who will be targeted or left for dead, either directly or indirectly. Like I think last time we talked, Natalie, you brought up the idea of like, well, what happens when you kill all the waiters? And what this suggests is like, well, at first they didn't want to kill all the waiters, but now they really are just like, we're gonna kill everybody. All the waitresses are fucking dead. And so they want to address like the stuff like, okay, who's getting shot? Who are the people being targeted directly? But I think it also because of that, I think it has like a much more... A lot of my issues with agency and people of color and the poor from the first film, I think, are addressed here. But I also think it really wants to have its cake and eat it, too. Or as the British would say, have its penny and its bun.
I'm going to trust you on
thing.
That one.
Just trust me on that. Because it also really wants to be an exploitation film. And it also really, really wants a Wakia written about it so bad. It has different gangs. It has like weird pseudo sci-fi weapons and sound effects. It introduces new factions and technologies. It really wants you to... It felt at times like Dead Rising, the first Dead Rising game. Did anybody here play that game? Mm-hmm. Years ago, where like, yeah, there's zombies. There's no zombies in this movie. Or there are, but the zombies are just like random purgers. But like, people loved the thing that they loved in those Dead Rising games was the psychos who were like, oh wow, this is the one who wears a clown mask and throws Molotov cocktails. Oh, yeah. These are the punks who drive around in a stolen Humvee and listen to like punk rock or whatever.
You could feel this, it felt like deeply like a video game at times. Like the 100%. Sequence when they're trying to the woman you're alluding to who's on top of a church, I think, and has got like an Uzi, and she's
an
just
Uzi
kind of
and
randomly
of
shooting
at
people and like proclamating from. It felt like, oh, this is like a game world building where it's like, oh, I'm gonna walk through this sequence. There's a or this is foreshadowing a boss that I'm going to fight, and I'm gonna be on the ground and have to shoot at the rooftop in order to take this one out.
All of that stuff feels so like checkbox, okay, we want to make sure that we have different types of gangs. This is the gang that you know.
We want the Christian extremists.
Yes, exactly.
Gotta bring back those masks.
We want
who
the crust punks. We want the right, the mask ones. We want the, and that is so at odds with the sort of thing. One of the things I liked about the first one was the very intimate feeling of just like we are focused on these characters, and I think this movie was definitely trying to be two or three different movies at once and suffers because of it. It's not an efficient movie the way the first... I don't think the first film's like a masterpiece by any means, but I think it's fairly efficient. I think it's very dense, the first film. I think there's a lot for us... There was a lot for us to pick through and, like, so much dialogue that had so many, like, ooh, let's find the subtext here. This movie's really straightforward comparatively. There's still a lot to unpack, but it's not... There's not as much, like, play with, if that makes sense. I liked it. I enjoyed it. It just wasn't the thing I thought it would be, which is a weird thing to say about the Purge films.
Do you feel the same way, Danielle?
Yeah, it's really funny to me because I kept remembering that my entire experience with the Purge until a couple of weeks ago when I actually watched the first one, then watched the second one yesterday, has been going to the haunted houses of the Purge. Going to the Purge houses.
What is the setup there for those? Like, is it just, oh, it's people in masks and they're screaming at you?
It's
okay,
the Purge
all right.
night. Yeah, it's a lot of that. It's a lot of that. And they tend to be the least interesting houses. Although, frankly, and this was a thing I noticed and my sister noticed, was like at the very end of the Purge house, you know, there are people of all races sort of in these masks and, you know, jumping out at you. But the last few in the house, and maybe this was just when I went and it was different actors cycle in or out, the last few were black actors in the masks that were like from this second movie. And it was sort of like,
yeah,
is that a thing? We got some race stuff going on here, or is that just sort of how it shook out at like who was on that shift
right.
or whatever? I mean, I don't know, but that was
that's the whole first something. Act with the white folks. Like that's part of why I was like, oh, what is this? What's happening with this movie? Is their story is very much white people are being terrorized by black and brown folk who are scaring them.
Yep.
Which
I definitely want to talk about, like, the framing of those shots, for sure, when we get to that point. But, like, as my sort of general whole thought, I liked that this movie, I liked it, first of all, I did like it. And again, I keep being like, wow, I like these way more than I thought I would, sort of. But my whole sort of take on it was, you know, the themes here feel like, this just keeps going off on the ways that evil is commodified. Mm-hmm. Kind of in these movies, how much it is just about money, and this is the way that rich people just, you know, wage their own war on the poor, and also very much about sort of toxic masculinity. And one of the things I liked the most was the character of Ava, for sure, and sort of how much just she just deals with toxic masculinity all day, every day. She's, you know, she gets rape threats everywhere she goes. Like, no matter what happens to her, she's like a woman of color in this world. And she, more than anyone else, understands how transactional everything mm-hmm. is in this world, in everything she does and everything she says in her character. So I thought that was actually kind of cool and subtle and interesting in this movie.
Yeah, I think it's great. Like, super early on, there's that moment of her being like, turning to look at the white woman who is her boss, who is like keeping them late on Purge Day, and you know she needs to act like beg mm-hmm. for this raise, and that is framed in such a way that's like, yeah, no, all of the power dynamics at work here are at work here, like, and there are moments when the film really expects you, the viewer, to like get it, or it was maybe a movie that felt at times like it was being made for multiple audiences, which Blumhouse Pictures often are. Like, that is not a rare thing. Like, this is. They also produced Get Out, right? And on top of producing the Annabelle movies and a million other things. But, like, but right. There was really just a feeling of, like, oh, wow, this section is for me in the theater. And then the Shane sections are for Shane. And what Shane doesn't understand is it's all going to come back around on his ass.
Yup.
Yeah, this movie, it's weird. I liked this movie a lot. Like, watching it was a fun ride. But I think structurally it's really messy, in part because it's trying to bridge so many different stories and trying to sort of speak to a lot of different audiences. But I think the other aspect of it is this also just feels like a movie that has a lot of different destinations in mind, but can't actually commit to which one of them is going to be the real denouement. Like, the movie has like false endings and like reveals of like, ah, you thought they were safe, but here's a new place for the for trouble. But the problem, like, the thing that like makes this movie a little frustrating is a lot of these conceits need a little time to breathe. You need time to like get that sense of, okay, here's what the superficial scenario is. And then you need time to think, like, this starts to feel a little bit wrong. This movie rushes that stuff consistently because it wants to get to not only the big payoff, but also because it really wants to have that other set piece. And that other set piece may not really fit with the movie they were making, but, like, fuck it. We're going to have a big-ass gun battle in this movie.
Yeah.
A number of them, honestly.
Yeah, and so it's... But it's still a lot of fun for me because I think it's a very technically proficient movie. And I love, whose photography? Jacques Dufresne. I actually really like the way this movie is shot. I love the sense of, like, the little touches of realism. The fact that, like, every car, the camera is mounted on the hood looking back into the interior. So, like... You can tell this is a real car moving through the city. There's not once do you have that standard shot of actors in a car, like, model green screened against a backdrop. Like, everything here is located. The city streets are dark and menacing the way they are sometimes late at night. Also makes it a difficult movie to watch at times because, like, this movie gets fucking inky. But nevertheless, I really did, like, for all my reservations about the way the movie is structured, it's a really fun, like, dark exploitation film with a lot of really satisfying violence. I mean,
that's like the weird contradiction. Like, it seems to be, especially with the credit sequence, a critique of gun culture and American, you know, a desire to do violence. And also, boy, there is a lot of it in this movie that is shot as if it was the coolest shit in the world.
Yeah, it's fetishized in a way that is less about making a point and more that this looks really pretty, doesn't it? And it does. And it's satisfying. And, like, shitty people die in a way that makes you go,
God,
fuck yeah.
Yep.
So
especially the rapist.
Yes.
Which one?
Well, fair. Yeah.
The, like, most intense, I guess. Well, the most obvious.
And that, so it's interesting because, like, we talked about, like, how many ideas this movie is, like, picking up and then throwing away and not necessarily, like, landing with, because this movie often feels like it's trying to cram, like, a trilogy's worth of ideas into a single film. And maybe they didn't think they were going to make another one. And they just had, you know, James DeMonaco was like, I'm just going to put it all in here. We'll see where it goes. Because, like, when the movie opens, and I'm curious, you know, Natalie and Danielle, your response to this, like, it feels like the movie is going to open being, like, specifically all about, like, sort of, like, toxic masculinity and sort of, like the there weren't as many gender politics in the first one, but this becomes, like, at the like, multiple instances of, you know, this main character dealing with at work, on the side of the street. When she gets back home, you know, constantly dealing with, like, men wanting to, quote unquote, protect her, wanting to harass her, wanting her body. And it kind of throws those ideas away pretty quickly. But I was curious, in like, the opening, like, 20 minutes, like, it's a pretty strong theme that it's harping on. Like, what did you think of that?
Yeah, I mean, it was super disturbing. It was, you know, hard to watch a lot of this be contained within either, like, Latinx communities or just Black and Brown communities in general. So, you know, the violence was, like, within, you know, these are people, which is, you know, oftentimes how it happens. It's someone you know. The first guy being, you know, someone at work, the next one being, you know, someone as she's walking down the street, and the last person being someone who knows her very well in her apartment complex. So it was it was interesting because Eva is framed as a very, I mean, she's, you know, self-supporting her family, her father and her daughter. And she, but she's framed as like a very anxious person. She's like very, you know, when she gets home, her mom, her daughter kind of like takes care of her in a way and is like, you know, we're going to be safe tonight. You don't have to worry. Every night, you know, every year we're safe. And so she gets a lot of reassurance from her daughter. And the thing that I was expecting, or the thing that I was wondering is, it, is this going to be like a sort of retribution film for Eva to like take, like to
yeah,
act
the revenge
back
film.
And to like
very common
fight back
horror,
against
yeah.
exactly yeah. exactly and I don't know and although the Callie does kind of but those acts of violence are never contested by Callie and Eva, they're always contested by someone else, and in specifically the sergeant is the one who protects them often, and so they I don't think either of them ever actually commit any acts of violence. I think the only one in the group are Shane and Liz who actually yeah. like shoot back or do they I mean yeah. Eva
Liz
and
gets
Callie
a taste.
Are
Liz purges.
Yeah, Liz gets a taste and
yeah.
Exactly.
Ava
so
shoots
because
there's
of...
a moment when she explicitly says she's out of ammo, right?
I have no more
she's
bullets.
Like, I don't have any
yeah.
I have no more bullets. But I don't know if
she
shot
does...
Yeah.
She was just shooting she was shooting out. This is when they were in the I remember that moment. I just can't remember.
It's the hunt zone. It's the arena.
Right.
Hunt zone.
It's the
she's doing battle royale.
But they're not. Yeah. But they're not shooting in. They're not shooting directly at anyone. They're like shooting.
No, they
fuck
that dude
like,
up. They kill Eric Trump. 100%.
Yeah,
they do. That's the time that they all.
But does Ava no? Because what I remember is Ava's shooting
maybe
over
not.
The barrier. So she's putting down like suppressing yeah. fire. But I'm not sure. Like I'm not
Liz
sure
is
she's
the one that's
actually
sort of
murdering people. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's the one dude who gets lit the fuck up by like a lot of bullets. That's all.
Yeah,
that's
I remember that. I just.
You're not wrong. I want to be 100%. I'm not saying that you're. I think you're like this is the big one of my biggest issues with the film. So I don't want to like step on your point.
No. I just think that they are not given like the same sort of spotlight or same sort of breathing room as you were saying before, kind of Rob, to really like revel in a moment of and maybe this speaks to like. Who they are not purgers, they're not people like seeking out like revenge and you know what's her name Callie is actually explicit like has been following Carmelo and is you know interested in sort of dismantling this holiday or whatever
new
you want to call it.
She wants to be radicalized.
Yeah, the new whatever. Yeah, so it's I don't know if I wanted their film because I don't know if that was the right that would be the right thing is to like okay now you know now women get to shoot or now you know I don't know like
that's
what
the sixth movie
yeah later women shoot the purge yeah
because when that happened in the first movie when what's her name
Lena Headey.
Yeah, I have no idea.
The Lena
sure,
Lena
yes.
Headey or whatever.
Yeah.
Headey.
Cersei.
Like finally yeah, Cersei finally hits. like gets some, you know, ammunition and she like fucks up the other white girl at the end. And it doesn't like feel good that you are now doing it. Like, I don't know. It's the fucking system that's fucked. It's like the entire like concept of this night that is fucked to participate in it is but also you know when Carmelo says we have to I mean it's so it's
the but
so,
also is like this whole movie right is
yeah.
like
yeah
it brings up one idea and then there's a but also and not in a both side sort of way it's just that it's jumbling together so many things that it even if it this movie probably could like we've seen this you know the first movie lands a lot of points like however you fall on those points like it lands something it's saying it has a message and this movie just like throws it all up in the air and they just kind of like it both throws it at the wall and like it doesn't really land anywhere in particular. Like Danielle, is that the same sort of sense that you got?
Yeah, in a lot of ways. I have some frustrations with one particular framing thing, which I just want to mention at first. I do love the sort of opening with Ava and how it's just sort of like, this is the exhaustion of being a woman of color in this world and in our world completely. Like, okay, yep, she goes to work. She has to deal with assholes at work. She has to deal with this white woman sort of oppressing her. She has to deal with all this sexual harassment. And she gets home and she's exhausted. She's so tired. And now she has to deal with her family, like her cranky father, who is wonderful, is a great character, is a tragic character. There's a lot of things going on there as well. But it's like, God, I just dealt with the world and getting, you know, trying to put food on the table and it's not enough. And Jesus Christ, now I have to deal with my family. Like, it's very like, oh my God, Jesus. All right, here we go. I'm tired. Like, that's the sense I got from her. She has PTSD from dealing with the fucking world and like what her station in the world is and doing her best. And she's exhausted and she's had enough of it. My frustration with that sort of framing that we've been talking about is absolutely that regarding violence is absolutely that, you know, it's sort of presented that, okay, Sarge saves them. He saves Callie and Ava through violence. He does it through like a violent act. He shoots the bad guys, right? When they get their moment to be sort of a savior, when they get their moment to save him, it's not through an act of violence, it's through an act of care, right? They pick him up, they drive him to the hospital, like they're taking care of him, which as like an EMT, of course, I think that's great. I think that's the best thing ever. But I am frustrated by how gendered that is, that like, okay, yeah, there's a good guy with a gun and you save him by being nice to him instead of like, okay, you know, the women are caretakers, the men are protectors. Like there is a very like kind of intense binary there, which again is not like the entire movie. It's not the entire framing of the movie, but it is the way that Ava gets to like have her savior moment at the end there.
It's frustrating because there are even moments in which he gets to be that caring person when he gives his bulletproof vest up for Callie. Like there are moments when he's checking in on people.
When he fixes Shane's shoulder.
Yeah, totally. He gets to be that same carer. He gets both sides of the spectrum. He gets to be the Punisher and also the EMT, but like they just only get to like convince him maybe violence is a bad thing in this case, mister. Mm-hmm. And like it's frustrating.
It almost feels like Mr. Punisher Man.
Mr. Big Punisher Man.
Yeah. It almost feels like they gave Liz the gun at the end where she wants to purge as like a mild corrective to this. Like, oh, we had to have a woman shoot something. White girl, you get your husband gets fridged and you get to shoot. Like it almost feels very much like they shoehorned that little bit in, like, oh, we gotta have a girl shoot something. You go. Like
yeah.
Convenient that his fridging happens at the very end of the film.
Why couldn't that be the first
Not usually
thing.
How fridging goes.
Yeah. There's almost a formal argument that you could make that I don't think I'm making, which is like, right, well, like who gets access to armed resistance in our world? Who gets to actually fight back? It's definitely not women of color. Maybe it's white women if they have access to, you know, the power of patriarchy who happens to be on their side in the moment. Like you can make that argument where it's like, right, they are disempowered because as women of color, they are disempowered.
Yeah, this movie is not making that argument.
Yeah, I don't think
I mean, maybe it's like it's in the thematic realm. Like it's within you could talk about that because it suggests a world where maybe that is true, but I don't think this movie does the work or does the world building to necessarily suggest it is explicitly true in this world.
If it is making that argument, I think it's wrong, right? I think the argument it should be making is like, and sometimes, I mean, it's what Carmelo says, which is like sometimes everyone should pick up a gun and fight the tyrants who are trying to kill us. That's a perfectly fine, like, including women of color.
Rob, you had something you wanted to say.
Yeah, I mean, watching this, I was thinking a lot about... So toward the end of the last episode, I think Austin gave us... applied to The Purge 1, I think, a rather strained reading of the film, how it would read to like a more conservative or reactionary audience, right? I think the text of that film doesn't support that kind of reading. You have to really see what you want to see to get that out of the first Purge movie. Not the first Purge, but the original Purge film.
Right, we'll get to the first Purge.
But with this one, I couldn't shake the thought that this movie's politics to a degree have gotten much more explicitly leftist, but also its subtext is much more easily readable as reactionary as well. That predominantly for the way everything is framed, it's in terms of class oppression, and the arc of a lot of these characters and what saves them in the end is like dawning class consciousness and awareness. That's what a lot of the movie is explicitly saying. But ultimately, this movie makes a decision pretty early on that this is also, as you put it last night, Austin, a Punisher film. Like,
oh, yeah.
Literally, like, the person who's going to save the day here is Sarge, who is an aggrieved, pissed off white father figure. And he's going to be the one who sort of takes charge and gets this disparate collection of people through this night. And if anything, like, you know, as you pointed out, Danielle, like, the role of the women who are around are to sort of restrain his violence, to sort of tame the, like, masculine beast that is being unleashed on Purge Night, which are, these are all very familiar tropes that sort of are completely compatible to the types of media that I think is often driven reactionary mindsets as well. You know, this is all very compatible with, like, a Death Wish type film. You know, they took mm-hmm. they took everything from him, so he's going to take everything from them. That's kind of what we've got going on here if you're watching the film as it sort of unfolds shot by shot. But every time this the film wants to give you its message, it's about, you know, actually it's these structural factors, and it's the rich who are out to kill us, and nothing will change unless we, you know, rise up together and threaten them. So it's a very strange film. That's why I think, like, its politics kind of fall apart on inspection. I think it's got, you know, good intentions, but I think it is completely spun in circles by its own, its choice about who its protagonist is and the redeeming power of violence that it portrays.
Yeah, I think that...
Okay, making sure that was a hand raised, not a scratch.
That was a hand. Yeah, I think that maybe that point would have come across more if the Punisher would have realized the implications of the purge outside of him. Mm. Like, the purging man goes out to do what the purge as a knight gives him the opportunity to do, which is to take revenge on, you know, the death of his son. But there's no point at which he realizes the implications of the purge as, you know, class suppression and cleansing and who is targeted. Like, you see it. You see, you know, when they're going through the tunnel, all the homeless people that are hiding in the subway tunnel, and then when the people come after the main group, the protagonist group, the homeless people come out and largely take the brunt of the fire, and most of them are killed. And there's no realization. I mean, Callie is constantly aware that this is all after them. Like, this is structured around the killing of poor, sick, marginalized people. And not from, I mean, Shane and Liz don't do it either, but the sort of main, they're trying to survive, right? So their sort of realization is less, you know, significant, because their goal isn't to participate in, they're trying to survive. So they're not really agents in this. They're just sort of passive. But the Punisher, Sarge, is an actor in this. He is an agent, and he is a participant in the purge. And there's no sort of recognition on his side of what the purge actually means, which I think is a huge, huge misstep.
Yeah, it's like one of the biggest. There was the moment in the movie where Carmelo steps from behind the screen. You know, he kind of finally shows up in the action.
Do you want to play that clip?
I want to talk about that in relation to the Punisher, Sarge, who I'm going to keep calling the Punisher.
Mm-hmm. Want to be John Wick. That's what I kept calling him in my head.
If only the action in this was as good as the action in John Wick.
I know.
Oh, God, yeah.
The use of explosives higher than class 4 is prohibited on Purge Night. there. We need a firing line. Let's go.
Who the fuck are you?
Nobody special. Just some people who don't necessarily agree with the purge is all.
We're here with Carmelo Johns.
Yes.
Fuck the new founding fathers! Fuck you! Fuck your money! And motherfuck the purge!
Carmelo! You over here?
I know you. You once said that the market mentality will no longer keep the American people stunted. We are outraged and we're fighting back.
Nice to meet you too, young lady.
There's a lot of them out here.
Yeah, well, there's more of us. We're more pissed off. It's time for them to feel what it's like. Change only comes when their blood spills.
You might want to get out of here. It's about to get nasty. He's gone. Come on.
I want to purge.
Look, we'll take care of her.
You sure?
Go. We got it.
Come on.
I'm sorry.
Take it.
Get ready to bleed, rich bitch ass! This is our time now!
God.
Where's Lizette, though?
I don't know. Yeah, you're right. She doesn't move up with them.
You don't see her light anyone up.
She stayed in cover, just took pot shots.
Look, my guy underlit that scene a little bit, not going to lie. Didn't really...
Also, that army of dudes with shotguns were conveniently just, like, let them... They just didn't move for, like, a good 2 minutes.
Oh, yeah. They were just like, not going to close in. This is an important... I still don't really...
I don't think the firing line's ready.
I don't even really know what the... What the spatiality of that room is, because I thought they came in from the back and then would have passed all of the dudes with the shotguns anyway. So like that's an amazing moment because it's goofy and it's like B movie excellence. It is just like fucking
a great actor, Michael like K. Williams, just relishing in a crappy character,
in like you know Black Panther Party cosplay, including just the most amazing long. Like salmon colored scarf and the fucking like circle frame glasses. He's just
and that beret.
It's perfect. It's so good. And in that moment, two things happened. One, I was like, "Why is the camera leaving him? Let's just stay here because the
he has to go home." Actually,
right? That's the actual problem, right? but like in terms of that's a moment where you're like, "Oh, right." The Punisher, the Sergeant, is only going to kill, is focused on his objective, and is like an individual who, maybe can save 3 or 4 people because, but it's accidental.
It's right. Incidental, as opposed to
and like
motivational.
The way to have structural change is like you need leadership and organization and recruitment and goals
and
that
goals.
Are like, hey, we are actively go. Also. Fucking Carmelo Jones would have killed those rich people in that car afterwards. He would not have just scared them and let them walk away. They were buying and selling people to kill them.
Like, or he would have said run and then shot her
in the
back.
And then shot them in the back. Yeah, absolutely.
I was waiting for that.
Both, honestly.
Shot her.
Although he does do that one. He has that one bit where he sprays the glass window with the bullets and just... Then they get on the phone. Whew.
We need to get some
backup.
Yeah, it's so good. But I think that there was a moment there where the film had a chance to like. I mean, I think it still is saying the stuff we just said about how structural change requires organization and actual resistance, and not just like one off superheroes who happen to be really good with guns.
But someone needed to be saying it to that character, right? Like if the movie was going to complete the link, it's like, okay, it's fine that Sarge is doing his thing, because of course there would be people that would act like this within this structure, but. That should have been the focal point where it's like, ah, here's the arc of what this movie is trying to say thematically, is like, doesn't mean he's going to go become a great guy, but at least should make the subtext should become text. Like the way this movie is suggesting a critical lens toward this character, that's the moment where the movie needs to say it and make that link explicit. And it just, instead, you have to have a 90-minute podcast discussion and start bringing that together in order
Well, that's the thing that's so frustrating for me about, you know, that we were talking about how the film is framed and he, you know, his arc as being kind of the central one. In the first movie, I said this too, which was like, in the first film, Ethan Hawke's like soul was the thing at stake. Yes, the family was also going to die, but the thing at stake was, is he going to break and become a purger too? Is his heart going to be convinced to throw this poor black man out into the woods, you know, out into the killers? And that is still the stakes here. Is Sergeant going to kill the person he set out to kill, or can these nice brown women convince him that maybe purging isn't the answer? And a slightly better film that would still have the problem of like the perspective problem of who is it who has the central stakes of the film could have at least been one in which what he says at this moment is like, you know what, my personal vengeance doesn't matter, I'm here for Carmelo Jones now, like let's shift that direction. Yeah, save the white dude's heart, save his soul, but like actually save it. Don't just say that like maybe the purge is bad, like actually lean into this notion of like maybe we should be resisting and fighting this thing. And I know that that's where this film series goes. I know that you know, someone else we didn't mention in that sequence is the stranger from the first movie is in that sequence. He's the first guy who shows up. He's the soldier from the first movie, the homeless guy, who is now part of the resistance. That's that dude. Shit. And he's also in the next movie. As far as the IMDb page says anyway. And so, like, I know that's the direction this movie is, this series is going in. I just wish it had gotten there a little faster, you know?
Yeah, let's take a quick break, and then we'll continue this discussion of Purge Anarchy.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
All right, Danielle, I know you had something to say.
Yeah, that scene that we just watched, which is, oh my God, it's so pleasurable and it's so fun on so many levels. And I love the sort of subtext of it, especially Austin, as you're saying. But it did fall apart for me a little bit, and not in the nitpicky way, but in the very like structure of it, of, yeah, the rich white lady got away. And also, probably, the people who they employed as soldiers probably are not rich also. They are probably also, okay, they're getting a salary. I'm not saying they're as poorly off as most of the people who are being purged, but it's not exactly like they went in and they actually slaughtered the rich assholes, right? They slaughtered their army of, maybe they did, but it's not.
Well, the movie
really
doesn't show
seen.
It, right? I think
really
this is all the connective tissue of like what the movie, like a much stronger conclusion to this film, where you still could have finished off Sarge's arc and learned that, you know, that he doesn't have to kill this man who killed his son. But yes, like the stronger, like more, you know, both left, like it, where it takes its leftist politics and follows it to some sort of conclusion is exactly what you're saying, Danielle. It's like the camera doesn't pan right out the hallway. It pans left to see what do these people do once they've invaded these rich white people? Like what does this violent resistance then turn to? Like, is it just continued escalation of, like, what is the politics of this movement? And like that's, I think we're all hungry for more of that. And the movie just doesn't give you, it gives you a taste, but it doesn't actually take the full step into it.
Yeah, is it that this army of the people, basically Carmilla's army, do they just fight the hired army of the rich people, and the rich people can just keep hiring
new people?
New people? Yeah. Can they keep hiring people to die and hiring people to kill for them? Like, it's very unsatisfying in that way, I think.
I don't know. That part, I sort of... Something I enjoyed about that is the fact they're all, like, dressed up as, like, waiters, for instance. That, like, the waitstaff who were servicing that ball and that, like, fucked up human auction... now come pouring in as armed guards to rescue, to kill off these, these martyrs, as they're framed, these people who've been set up to be prey animals, basically. I sort of enjoy that you've got this group of people who are basically workers themselves, to an extent, who are still, like, deeply invested in protecting and serving the interests of the people who've set this entire thing up. Because I think that's something that the politics, that speaks to the politics of this kind of situation, the message it's getting out, which is that the interests of a predatory upper class are always going to be guarded, protected, and serviced by a group of people who you would think their economic interests would lie with the people they're oppressing, but they have other interests and other values that cause them to happily join in the oppression and servicing it. It reminds me of, there's a, I'm not sure where the quote originates from, but it came up, a debate about whether police unions
should
be
treated
as a
core
part of the labor.
100%.
Gotcha.
And there was a resolution, within, I think, the UAW, that acknowledges that historically and contemporarily, police unions serve the interests of police forces as an arm of the state, and not the interests of police as laborers. And I think that's who these people are standing in for. That is how they organize, that is how they conceptualize themselves. Not as workers, not as people like you, but as people who are interested in the servicing of that oppressive system.
Right, like this is the way a system like this functions, first and foremost, is through arms of education and arms of entertainment and mass media that convince you that the way things are the way things are, and that this is the right way. And then if those things ever fail, if there is ever resistance, if there is ever, radicalization, that is when, like, legitimized force steps in, right? That is when, like, they say, oh, we have the power. We have the sole jurisdiction of violence. We are those who can decide who lives and who dies. And so go kill them for us. And, like, at that point, like, we cannot build a coalition with people who are making that decision, who are deciding. Like, for me, there are lots of – we had this discussion earlier this year with the Amazon strike stuff and Twitch streaming on the site. And, like, we tried to work through where we didn't feel comfortable breaking a kind of organized action, direct action, and kind of running against it versus when we were, we needed to on other days, right? We couldn't not stream for 3 weeks straight, but we absolutely wanted to still contribute and recognize that. And so we picked a day where we could and blah, blah, blah. And there's lots of conversation around the gray area between the needs of being someone in the working class who needs to pay their bills, and that means you have to engage with capitalism and work within the status quo so that you don't starve to death, and the kind of, like, or are you just supporting the system, right? And I think it's fair to have lots of different perspectives in there and to have debate around that stuff. For me, the hard line is, like, I have no interest in defending police unions. I have no interest. I'm actually more sympathetic to, like, soldiers than I am police, right? Because soldiers tend to be recruited from, or are often recruited from, low-income families. And, there was an entire realm of rhetoric about escaping the life that capitalism has often put people into to begin with. But I think that for me, the film does an all right job of that. I still wish there had been, and I also am not surprised that it couldn't go all of the way to, like, it could vilify the super rich. It could do the slave auction, the martyr auction. It could have the, like, goofy, again, like, video game-esque boss groupings of the rich families who are all bidding. Like, down to the Trump and his two sons who
the
love
Trump
fucking
boys, the large adult
it's the
sons.
Large adult sons are in this movie. It's unbelievable. They go to an enclosed
and they broke this.
They go
repeatedly
to an enclosed hunting ground.
This is 2014, right?
Yes, 100%.
This was written and shot prior to even him coming down that shitty gold escalator.
Right. So, like, it is all of that stuff I think is fascinating. I think it's like worth trying to work out where you feel like on an individual thing. Or I think like there's another great example of that in the film, which is the Lakeith Stanfield character, right, who shows up and is like pulls off the mask, reveals that he has the God mask on, and is the one who is like, listen, I'm just making money. We're not here to purge. We don't kill people. We just sell. We're just slave traders. We just capture slaves and sell
the movie
them.
Like touches on at various moments like the economies that would be created as a result of a situation like this. Like you see it in the opening of the movie when like people are offering weapons and protection, and it's like there would be people, even folks that you would think like your class is being exploited through this, but people in different situations, they're gonna be people that just try and, you know, make a buck. They're gonna see a situation and exploit it themselves. And I think this movie, again, this is one of those things that doesn't stick the landing on, but at least introduces interesting questions about like, well, who would exploit the exploited in order to kind of like turn a blind eye and make a few dollars. And there are like multiple situations in this movie where they touch on where those economies would sort of sprout up.
That scene we showed also, I think, just contains one of the like really revealing fumbles of this movie, which is that I forget her name.
Liz.
Yes.
White girl Liz.
Yes.
Sorry, Liz.
Liz ends that scene with like, I want to purge.
Oh, yeah. Shitty line.
And it's like, it's really frustrating because, like, first of all, like, young lady, in this house, we take up revolutionary arms in resistance. But, like, very much to the point, like, literally, the movement that just burst through the doors and came and saved your ass is explicitly in opposition to the purge. They are not purging. They are resisting, they're liberating, they're fighting back, but they are not in any way buying into the sense that, like, you know,
this will cleanse.
Yeah. That it's time to water the
your natural,
you know,
animalistic
tree of the American
violent
psyche.
Like, impulse must now be enacted in order to become a pure human.
Right. And she's where it leaves it is like, I want to purge.
As if it's
and
a
like she's bought into
like,
the ideology.
We'll take care of her. Yeah, and I'm like, what does like does that mean she's one of you now? Because I hope not. It's an unsettling line. Like maybe it is intentionally unsettling in that, oh, this is the way Liz reacts to this trauma. Oh, something bad happened to me? Now I want to purge. Not I want to help. Not I want to join this movement. But I'm fucking
Rob,
pissed.
You know, it's a big tent revolution. When we bring, if you've read The 18th Brumaire of Louis Napoleon by Karl Marx, you understand that sometimes you build alliances between various strata of society.
Is Liz Joe Manchin?
Liz is Joe Manchin. I would have been upset. I don't think it would have been earned if she had gotten up and said, like, fuck the purge. Like, no, like, you were in a car at the beginning of this movie having a breakup on purge day. Are you fucking kidding me? You have no revolutionary heart. You have...
Who breaks up on purge day?
First of all, who breaks up on purge day? Are you kidding me?
They
went to
Whole
Foods. Go to Whole Foods.
You might as well have just done it by text.
Exactly. It's like, don't break up until after Valentine's Day. Don't do it. You're not allowed. If someone's birthday is coming up, wait until after their birthday. Don't do that. Just get the fuck out of it bad.
One of the unsaid rules of the purge.
That's why it's a countdown.
On the purge.
But also, don't get engaged.
Do not get married on the purge.
Like, that's the, like,
Oh, yeah. But no, that is some fucking...
What if you met at the purge?
I
bet a lot of love blooms on the battlefield that is the purge.
Well, that's the arc of this movie, practically. It gets a family by
the
end.
That's the movie, is they all get together. I don't know if that continues into the next movie. I mean, go ahead.
But his attachment... Oh, sorry. Go ahead. I was just going to say his attachment is to the daughter, not to.
I think they try to do.
I mean, his.
They have a moment.
I think they have a moment, but it's about Callie. He's like, you have a very special daughter.
Doesn't he hold her hand when they're in the?
Holds her hand.
Offering help.
Because they set up the whole thing at the beginning where she's not interested in the dude at work, remember? And her friend is like, I would walk that dog all day long. And like the whole thing is like she's someone who doesn't feel like she has time or space for love in her life, but now she's met this strong white boy and that's it. She's in all the way. Like, she cares about him by the end of that movie.
Uh-oh.
She cares. Yeah, she definitely cares about him, but it could be seen that way. It's interesting because I watched the second half of it this morning with a friend that was staying with me, and she kept saying, "Damn, like this daughter and this dude, they about to, like, I don't know, they're."
It's a weird energy.
They're close.
Right?
I think part of that is Callie is weird. Just really charismatic in this movie. She's I'm very upset that she hasn't been in like anything since this, because she carries a lot of scenes in this movie with her back talking and her like snarky teen energy.
The scene where she chastises her mother over like, did you tell the speech how we went over it? You know, when she was asking for the raise, like the look on her face of disdain when she just did not believe that her mom committed to the speech she was supposed to give her
boss. The generational politics of that family are actually really interesting.
Yeah.
Like I think it reminded me of Mafia 3 a little bit when you meet Cassandra and she just runs down your guardian.
Yeah.
Was it your uncle? Who initially gets killed, but the entire idea of his entire way of accommodating the society and the world that he encountered ultimately didn't serve him or anyone well. It just, you know, in the end it came to naught. And I kind of think there's a generational like argument being made here too, where she's the she's the young politically aware radical, and her grandfather is just tired. And he like sees no hope in resisting the system. The best he can do is try to create some space for his family within that system through his own sacrifice.
This game made me think of Mafia 3 a lot. By the time we get to the auction, I was like desperate for the KKK killing scene in Mafia 3. And just like I just think in general the way that it tried to walk the line between kind of exploitation film and revenge film and like a desire to be socially conscious. It just, I kept thinking about Mafia 3. I really wish Mafia 3 was on Xbox Game Pass.
connected to other podcasts.
It's one of those things where, like, I think maybe the marketing reveals some of the intentions of James DeMonaco, where, like, you can see so explicitly balancing commercial interests versus, like, the social conscious elements, where, like, that first trailer is just about white people getting hounded, you know, bad thing happens to them, and then, you know, they got to go on the run so they don't get killed. And it seems like this movie, like, very, like, struggles with that a lot more, whether it's, like, purely, like, commercial interest or, like, I just love shoot stuff. It's, like, hard to tell. But I think this movie, like, struggles a lot with that, and, like, a lot of its weaknesses are born out of its, like, balancing of the, like, more... operatic like shootouts and things like that. We touched on the family stuff, and I want to bring in another clip, which is the family scene that occurs, which is both revealing of the sort of like family. Is this Sprint ad plays on YouTube for me?
Me too.
Not sure this scene is great for Latinx folk.
We should just put a content warning on everything.
There's a lot going on here. All right, so let's cut to this clip.
Let's put on some music and let's just liven it up a little bit, right? Come on, you want to dance? No. Come on. Liven up the party. Come on. Let's dance.
Look, I gotta go. I need the car. You trust these people? Because your friend likes to drink and she's taking pills back there.
Yeah, she's pretty wild. But we'll be okay. She's a good friend.
What? You don't want to... What? Lorraine, do you care if we dance? She doesn't even care. She's not even paying attention. Look at her. He's asleep.
I don't know how to thank you.
Okay. If you can just tell her I need to go right now, that would be really great.
I know what you're doing tonight. You're going out there to kill someone who wronged you. You believe in this night, don't you?
I think you should just take care of your daughter. She's special. And you're very lucky. And I need the car.
There is no car.
What?
I'm sorry they don't have a car. But we needed you.
And I needed the car.
I did what I had to. I did it for my daughter.
I was doing this for my son. And I trusted you. You have no idea what you might have taken away from me tonight.
Hey. Look, I know you're angry with my mother, but I really think you should just stay here. Yeah. Just wait out the night with us, okay?
I heard you say that you're doing it for your son. Yeah, I don't know him. I'm pretty sure he would not want you to do whatever it is that you're going to do.
All right, Callie.
Please, come on. You're safe here.
Get out of my way.
Please, just... You can just... Please.
Come on, get out of the way. Get back!
What are you doing, Lorraine?
Jesus Christ, she's dead.
You killed your sister. She's your sister, Lorraine. What are you doing?
You know what I'm doing. I read all your emails, you cheating motherfuckers. You both deserve to die.
It's okay, Lorraine, stop.
No.
Get back up.
No.
I'm sorry. Lorraine,
no.
You shoot me, you shoot this woman.
Just let her go.
You don't want to do that. Lorraine, I'm sorry. I didn't mean anything. I didn't mean it. She hasn't done anything to you. Okay? So let us cut this out.
Fuck you. This is my right granted to me by my government. Leave him alone. He's mine.
Door now. Go. Door. Go. Door. Now. Move!
This is the wackest scene in the whole fucking movie. 100%.
Natalie, just go. Just go.
I mean, there are just so many bad tropes here. There's like, this is a bad telenovela that I've seen before. Like, this is just playing, first of all, on like the like loose like Latin woman who drinks a lot and like is flirtatious and you know and then the like, you know, act of what is it called when you act of passion or whatever, like crimes of passion,
just giving that hot blood
sister. Yeah, that hot-blooded Latinas, you know, be you know, going off when it's really frustrating because you get there and it's like, come on, we're all family. Like, again, another like very like Latin thing, like you have guests, you know, you serve them, you're trying to feed them, you're trying to take care of them, you're trying to like make it a hospitable environment for them. And then it goes into, you know, this you know, the flirtatious woman, whatever, the flirtatious Latina, and it's just like a pass by. There's nothing else there. And then that scene's over, and they move on, and that's it. And they go, downstairs, and then they try and just get out of the building.
We don't
and
even
that
get resolution.
Family is just
yeah.
fucked. And no, there's yep. zero resolution there. And it was so strange because going into that scene, I was so anxious that whole time. And I think maybe that's the point, is like having the dude in like the army jacket and then him just kind of being super quiet, just sitting there. Like, he was going to be the kind of like lone wolf kind of freak out guy. Like, I was waiting for him to freak out. And of course, it was the other. I don't know. It just, that scene was just. It was just a little like plot pin that just to push the thing along, and there was like nothing. Also, their apartment
they
was
a nice
really
fucking
nice,
place.
And she was a waitress too. They had a really nice place, and she was a waitress too.
And it was implied that, like, you know, it was only a couple of blocks or maybe half a mile from where they started, which. I mean, yes, there are like gentrified neighborhoods and things can change a couple blocks over, but there was no suggestion that this was that kind of neighborhood.
God.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Also,
yeah,
I don't have a car in LA. I don't know how she gets.
Well they're
that's
close
definitely
to downtown.
Possible.
She might not.
They do get there via the
I
subway.
They might
get
not.
Via
I mean,
that weird subway chase.
If you go, when I lived in LA, I moved there without a car, and when I would use the public transit system of the buses and the limited train, and like you go on there and there are no white people. Like that is like, so it wouldn't be it was not totally outside of the idea that there would be people like, you know, service workers that were actually using the public transit that LA
has. The thing that sticks out for me with this is, like, I cannot speak to the entire makeup of the creative team here. I know that DeMarco is, like, a white dude from Brooklyn who is open about his politics. I know that Bloom is also, the producer, is also open about his politics. There's a really interesting interview with some of the creative team on this series that's over at The Guardian. If you do a search for Making America Gory Again, How the Purge Films Troll Trumpism, there's a really interesting write-up about what the kind of political heart of these movies are. But, like, this moment felt like, one, in line with their politics in a way that I'll explain in a second, but two, very much like white folks, or just whenever there are times as a creator when someone when you go like, oh, I think I can include a marginalized group in this sequence. I think there's a sequence here in which it makes sense to include some more Latinx folks, or, oh, this is a sequence where there could be a trans character, or, oh, this can be a sequence where there, blah, 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 blah. Like, you make those decisions because you're like, oh, yeah, I think inclusion makes sense. I want to reflect the reality of the world. But you're not knowledgeable about some of the harmful tropes and the kind of, you're not thoughtful about the ways in which previous attempts at representation, or not even attempts at representation, but just previous representations of a given marginalized group, are filled with harmful stereotypes and ideas about what that group is. This felt very much like a white ally fucking up to me, because the goal, I think, of this scene, especially if you read what they've written about elsewhere, is like, for them, the Purge films were first originally pre-rise of Trumpism about gun control in America, and were like about the ways in which America was addicted to violence and was willing to bring guns out at any point. And what struck me about this sequence is, like, this sequence can be in any movie, because this, like, yeah, Lorraine has a gun. Like, that's a thing. And Lorraine can just have a gun in America. Nothing about the Purge, besides her speech about how this is her you know, founding fathers given right, her government given right to kill people today. But, like, the domestic violence sequence is something that happens every day in America. Mostly not with the woman killing the dude. Like, this mostly goes the other way, where the angry dude believes his wife is cheating on her, or cheating on him, and she is the one who gets killed. But, like, this sort of sequence, the family dispute that turns deeply violent and where someone gets shot and potentially killed, is one that already exists in America. I think that's what they're going for here, but they hit the fucking landmine and fall into all of the worst shit around, like you said, kind of passionate Latina characters, and, like, down to, like, the, like, they put on the music and try to, like, oh, we should dance, and it's like, oh, it's the worst. It's the worst. And it is, like, it feels like the most, like, woke ally fucked up because they did not do the homework, you know, or hire a consultant.
Well, and it's if you want to see, like, such a contrast, even just within the, you know, Blumhouse Productions, the, you know, the studio that produced this film, is, like, they also produced Jordan Peele's Get Out, right? And so, like, that's a movie that, like, is steeped in the history of, like, racist stereotypes and African Americans in cinema, and is able to avoid, play with, toy with, riff on those landmines because of Jordan Peele's, you know, understanding of the history there, right? And so, like, that's what this movie lacks. It's like, it is the instance of doing clearly coming from a good faith effort, but without the knowledge to, like, script it in a way that avoids those landmines. So you can see the distance between those two, even in the same production house in which you have films.
I said DeMarco. His name is DeMonico. I just want to correct that. Apologies.
DeMonico.
Yeah, it's a really troubled, like, first of all, I think there's a version of this movie where this is basically the second half of the film. And I think that where this goes badly awry, it's trying to rush things. And it ends up being broad and kind of gross and offensive because it turns everyone into a character that exists to do one thing and then say one thing and then do another. And that's the entire purpose of the scene. There's a version of this that I think is very good, where they get to what they think is going to be safe harbor, and the Purge is always with you at the ball, right? It's always the mask of the Red Death. This was a little bit of theme touched on in the first film, this idea that the minute the boyfriend shows up in the first movie, I want to have a man-to-man with your dad. Well, on Purge night, and that implicit threat of violence, nothing is what it says it is. Every argument, every discussion has with it this implicit threat of, like, potential violence. And I think there's a version of this movie that plays around with that, and this notion that you think you've arrived to safety, and it turns out that there are divisions in this family that are possibly going to like burst out into violence at any moment. And also the fucking minigun semi crew are going to be pulling up outside. I think all that stuff would have worked better, but instead it's just this weird, like, very quick sock puppety moment where it's like, look, we need to have some, Latinx stereotypes sort of act out and act badly, like kindly older folk just happy to, you know, host you and be good hosts, the wanton sister, and the sort of the rundown dysfunctional husband and wife in that house. There's a version of that where that all has room to breathe, but this movie really wants to get to the part where they're being hunted in the Purge garden.
Mm-hmm. I think the moment that should have been like opened up a little bit more is actually when she says, "It is my right to purge," because that would have been the point to have like a character revelation of this actually is not for you. The purge is not for you. Like what you are doing in the purge is only contributing to like the larger, your participation is only contributing to the larger, you know, othering and suppressing and, of, you know, your people of, marginalized people. So if in that moment, I don't know, it's like, hearing her say it is like my right feels like the marginalized folk who have become like Trump.
But I like
you know what I mean?
But that is a real thing. Like that's the thing I do like about this movie is that like that is absolutely a thing that exists in my family as well. People who have this background, but like my God, in terms of like ideology and outlook, like they are white and they feel entitled to the things that white Americans get to do. Right? I can easily imagine like people in my extended family like having that. Hey, what do you mean I can't do this? Fuck you. You know, I'm entitled to this. Don't get in my way.
This is the Diamond and Silk. He's your president song about Donald Trump. Are you not? Have y'all not suffered? Okay. Well,
I don't. My family doesn't deal in. We don't play so broadly as Diamond and Silk.
Okay. Well, that's good. That's good for you all.
But I think that part, like, I don't expect that character to have the realization, but I do expect that scene to get to what Natalie was just saying, right? That scene needs to arrive at some sort of conclusion about this, as opposed to just,
leaving it open.
Leaving it open, the family's completely abandoned. Who the fuck cares what happens to them?
That part's I'm so it's we. I guess here's the thing. Here's the thing that I keep coming back to is we get that family. We get Lorraine, who's like, "This is my God-given right." We get the Lakeith Stanfield character, who has a great name, by the way. It's like it's a descriptive name. It's just meant to be like the character's name is just like a descriptive. It's God, where is it? Young Ghoul Face. It's just like he's young and he has. And I think the name of that
my LP drops next week.
But Young Ghoul Face is just it's such a good name. Such a good name. There are these like people who are class traitors and who have betrayed their races and who have bought in and believe that the system that hurts them is actually fundamental and necessary, which the film reveals that the big twist of this movie, I think they set up at the beginning when it's clear that they're like towering project or they're targeting Project Towers and they're like targeting specific like high density urban residential centers. The twist is not enough people are purging. The people don't want to purge actually. And so to keep up the lie of the purge, the conservative government has straight up just sent out death squads to inflate the fucking numbers, which is doubly interesting because the other thing that changes between this movie and the previous movie in the intro is that unemployment's gone up. In 2022, unemployment is 1%, and in 2023, it's under 5%, which is, like, a substantial jump. But, like, the film doesn't believe in the purge. The film, we know that the film thinks that, like, there is no God-given right to purge. And so I am invested in, and the purging doesn't work. The purging doesn't actually get rid of any, you know, emotional baggage. Otherwise, the rich people wouldn't just auction off the right, because otherwise that would mean that they wouldn't be getting to purge, right? Like, the film understands that stuff. And so I am interested in these edge cases where the ideology has affected marginalized groups, but all at the same time, mm-hmm. like we don't really get a lot of how it's affected non-marginalized groups besides the ultra rich. We get the ultra rich, but then it's like we get Shane and Liz, and that is it for just like everyday white folk. Like there is not, or I guess you get the like. Oh no, I was gonna say you get the first movie. Well, yeah, you get the first movie, right? I know, but in this film, yeah. which is like horror movies, sometimes you just go see one. Do you know? Like, you can't always count on someone mm-hmm. to have seen the whole fucking thing. And so, like, for me, there is definitely something that's like, oh, I wish we, given that those are the two things we get, the resolution on both of them is not necessarily complete. The young ghoul face stuff, I think, wraps up fine. You are going to have black dudes who are willing to support, like, a racist system and to get theirs, and it is something that the black community has been fucking dealing with for a long time, and we have to keep dealing with it. Mm-hmm. But Lorraine doesn't get that attention. There is no... It doesn't feel like there is a bow tied on that scene. She literally just kind of slinks out of frame at the end, as if to say, like, yeah. "Well, you know,
well, this has happens. Gotten awkward."
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
Yep. Yeah,
yeah. I wanted to talk just the tiniest bit about sort of dehumanization and framing, in terms of sort of the way young Ghoulface. I think it's young Ghoulface.
Yeah, young Ghoulface,
right? Who's presented at the very beginning. Yeah. There is the part that made me the most uncomfortable in the movie before the shootout scene with the family. It was definitely the sort of the way that Shane and Liz perceived the black folks in the beginning. Like, you know, they're having their breakup at Whole Foods and all this is happening. And then they see these sort of masked figures and they're shot in like slow motion. They're backlit so that their features are just completely flat. It's just this incredibly sort of dehumanizing framing. Like, the way it's shot is just very, like, oh, this is supposed to be scary. This is supposed to make you uncomfortable. And this is definitely, like, how these white people are, like, seeing these people.
It's
and
the first jump scare, like, of the film.
Yeah. It's in, like, a movie that doesn't really, like, do jump scares.
Right.
Like, a series that doesn't really do jump scares. But, like, one of the ones it does is that little sequence.
I expect, and the thing is, like, when he returns and they get captured and they're in the back of the truck, I expected the revelation. Part of it is just, like, I like Lakeith Stanfield, right? Like, he's good in Atlanta. He's great and Sorry to Bother You. And so I was like, oh, wow, the twist is, like, oh, maybe they're working for Carmelo, or, like, maybe they're part of
the... Yeah, I thought 100%.
That's what I wanted!
And,
yeah.
You know, I think I like this better. Like, I am more interested in a film that both has Carmelo Jones and also has... the opportunists, but what that does is it means that it doesn't subvert that initial framing of the black folks as scary and frightening, which you need to do if you're having all the messages this movie is trying to put forward, you know? I don't know.
Right, it's not a subtle movie,
no.
That's the thing. Like, it does some subtle work, yeah. Like, in obviously we're talking about a lot of that subtle work sort of throughout this entire discussion. But in general, it is not a fucking subtle movie.
No, it goes even
it has
further,
the stockbroker.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It has the stockbroker trussed up like a Christmas turkey over, you know, over a bank.
It's a bank.
Yeah, they're going through the financial district at that point. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they're going for, like, very intense visuals, and they're going for that exploitation movie feel, which, yeah, again, it really does feel a lot like, in feeling, it does feel like Mafia 3 in so many weird and interesting ways. But, yeah, it's one of those things where, like, okay, if you want to get this message home, amongst the gunfire, amongst the incredibly unsubtle messages kind of the rest of the movie, you kind of have
commit.
To make that point in some fashion,
totally.
Right? You have to kind of, like, subvert that framing in some way, which it never does. Like, Shane just sucks. Liz just kind of sucks. You know, it's just very, like, I guess I'm giving her a tiny bit of points for no real reason. I don't know if they both suck, I guess. But it is very, like...
Hey.
Yeah, I would have wanted that to be complicated in some
they
fashion,
decide not to break up on
framing.
Purge Day in the end. You know, they decide they love each other. I love you. Gun, 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 gun.
Yeah. Wesley Morris, I think, had...
He died happy.
Wesley Morris had a great verdict on this, which is just such a good fucking line from his review over at Grantland. if the Paul Haggis Best Picture winner Crash were an asteroid that hit Earth, The Purge Anarchy would be its post-apocalypse, which I think is the greatest single-line summary this film could fucking get.
Totally.
Yes.
Like, it's a Mad Max film, right? Like, it's not a good Mad Max film. It's like, it's I this is somewhere else. I think this was on IO9, maybe. Someone described it as a Mad Max meets The Punisher, right? And like, those early sequences of Sergeant's car pulling into frame, and you realize it's like all super armored, and it looks
cool
like
car.
It's a cool car. And like, it's a cool car in the way that cars in video games are cool cars, right? Like, its armor is absolutely meant to be looked at as much as it is to protect anything. That's a car that if guns had come out of the hoods, I'd be like, okay, there's
of
guns
course.
In there.
Yeah,
of course.
It's a Batmobile.
He's had a year to prepare. I mean, of course.
God.
So he's definitely has some sort of army background or special forces background or something, right? Because this guy acted like the Punisher. He moved through space like the Punisher. This was not your average dad who lost a son and then spent 12 months becoming the Punisher. He must have had some background, right?
Big Daddy called him Sergeant. Like, Big Daddy knew him.
That's the name of that character with the Gatling gun.
Should we get into that ending?
Yeah, let's talk about the ending, I guess. We only have a few minutes left, so...
I mean, yeah, like the ending. We won't play the clip here, so we don't have time. But the implication. Well, I guess Austin, like you touched on the ending, the twist. Or do you want to touch on like what he actually Sarge actually does, where he gets into the room. They escape from the Latina lover, and then they get hunted.
They get hunted.
And then they escape and then he decides now he actually wants to go and
purge,
you know, enact his purge, like,
because
his protest of
someone, like a drunk driver killed his
hit his child
three times over the legal limit.
Yeah,
he says,
very specific,
like,
about
ugh.
That. And the guy ends up getting off.
Judge Kavanaugh, but what's the legal limit?
Oh,
whoever church says,
fuck,
he likes beer. He still likes beer.
And it turns out it does the thing that everyone, like, it was the most boilerplate ending of just like, he's going to go in there and he's going to be like, he broke their back door open 3 weeks ago. He broke their security lock weeks ago. He's going to show up and get him. And then he doesn't, obviously. We don't see the moment where he decides not to kill him, but you can infer it. And then...
Yeah, he walks out, then he gets shot by a chain gun man.
By Big Daddy.
Big Daddy, and then we get the just one of the worst tropes of horror films, which is the villain monologue, in which they explain the villain exposition dump, which is where we get that they've been purposely pumping crime into the system because not enough people are purging. It's year six of this, I think we established at the top, so it doesn't really leave like. Part of the reason one thing I like about these films is that they don't really leave the conclusion with like. There's no post-credits scene. There's no, like, obvious spot where the next one is going to pick up. There's, like, some thematic trappings about where the series could go from there. But we're not really left with, where does this one go after that? I mean, we'll get into that. But before we do, I at least wanted to visit, it is Tuesday, Tactical Tuesdays.
Yeah.
Rob was angry about this at the top. Rob, when you're thinking about how you're going to deploy your strategy, how you're going to survive a situation... A lot of it is preparation, right? Like, it's not just about what you do in the moment. It's about, like, what do you do before the moment comes? And these people, Rob, what were these people doing on the day of
the
purge?
They only have one bag, Patrick. They're like, let's drive across fucking town. Let's drive to the Whole Foods across town. We got a good hour 45
this
till purge.
And, if, and chain,
yeah.
You're talking? Yeah.
Yes. We don't hear any traffic. We'll be home with like 15 minutes to spare. Should be good. We need this baguette.
Nobody else is out. No lines. Like, you know,
babe, how are we going to survive purge night if we don't have arugula? Where's our arugula? Like, the thing is, it's established. They go to this fucking grocery store to have their fight, but also to have one brown paper bag full of like organic groceries.
Which they don't even take with them, honestly.
Yeah. And it's that is the part that just
it's all young girl
fucking waste.
I would have more sympathy for what befalls them if they come out of that grocery store with like three carts and they're like, how are we gonna load this thing up? Because then it's like, oh, you need to, like, clearly you need to stock up for the night.
You never
I don't know.
Know
why you 12 hours, you know, if you run
couldn't done it yesterday.
That's all I'm saying. Just go yesterday.
Well, yesterday they had the marriage counseling.
You know, okay, fair, fair. But for real, in my house.
No, they've been known they're separating.
Yeah. They just haven't told the sister.
Yet. He's looking at the pictures on the iPad. It is. Oh,
My God. I thought that was someone else. I didn't know that was her at the first. Yeah.
She's on the surface,
like,
right?
You're looking at it in the car right next to her. What are you doing?
Wait, what's she looking at? What's she looking at?
He was looking at pictures of them together, but she had curly hair at the time. So I was I thought it was someone else. And I was like, she's like, what's that? And he's like, nothing. And I was like, how are you just going to be looking at pictures of you and someone else, like an ex or something, like in the car next to your, like.
Such a Shane thing.
No, but.
Fucking Shane.
I'm with Austin. It's anyway. Purge week. Like, fully, like, five days before last grocery trip is done. And at that point, I'm just going to spend
the week
fortifying.
You knew it was coming.
Yeah.
Well, and it seems
you have a
like,
year to prepare.
This actually could have been, like, in a different film, like a way they show the contrast between the classes, right? Where. Let's say Liz and Shane were, you know, had actually prepared for a week, like they're ready, and like some other, you know, contrived driven forces them to be on the streets. But it would make sense that like the lower class folk would have to work until the last possible second because they need the money. Mm-hmm. They don't have the resources to take that week off because they don't have the vacation days, the wealth in order to do that. Like that could have been an example, like a moment where like they really underscore like one of the broader themes of the film so far. But you know, it doesn't really lean into that at all.
Or is it just the carelessness of the white couple?
Sure.
Like, it's not going to happen to us, you know? Like, that's also kind of it where, you know,
it's not
gonna
happen
we have time
us.
To make a last-minute trip. We can get back. Like, we're going to be fine.
The way she screeched, we're downtown! Like,
I know.
You know what
I
happens
like,
downtown? It was just, like, she screeched the shrillest, like, white wine. Like, oh, that was... That said a lot.
I mean, LA's downtown did used to be a lot different. Like, you can, I mean, I've marked the evolution of LA's downtown with the too many E3s that I've gone to. And, like the downtown LA area is far different now than it used to, you know, it was the Staples Center and that was about it. Now it's an actual
But also that has to do with pushing, like, the areas that they were, like, I don't know. It was so weird that this took place specifically in downtown, which is, like, notoriously is where, you know, LA and LA government has pushed the homeless population to be concentrated in downtown, like, has actively sort of almost corralled all of the homeless population into to be centered in downtown. You know, the amount of industries that are downtown are industries that are close to downtown, which means that a lot of like in terms of factory, like textile factories and things like that, they're like these downtown is largely it's such a weird place because of how it's changing. You have like the arts. I don't know.
It's kind of two downtowns too. There's like the the convention center business district downtown, and then there's like the old downtown, which is more like an arts neighborhood, but also is still like very densely populated with you know, homeless folks, and it's also just it's an older, like, you know, mid-century American city in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. So it's downtown can be kind of a weird and eerie place if you're there like after 2 a.m. like any downtown in a city, like where pretty much everyone's home for the night, and in LA things can get extremely deserted in a way that's eerie. But this whole idea of them not I did kind of like their performance of the ritual of white flight was denied them, and immediately it's time for full panic.
Yeah.
Also, he looks at one dumpster and there's a dead guy in it and decides that's not a way just go to this. My wife was screaming, like, which is part of the fun of horror films is like people making poor decisions, but just like one of the things that like kind of drives me up a wall about the Purge movies in general is, like, I mean, obviously, you know, suspension of disbelief, but, like, there are, like, spots you could just, innocuous places you could hide for 12 hours and, like, probably ride this thing out. And a dumpster is a good, that's a good option. Like, it's made up,
yeah.
It's maybe not.
Probably got food in there.
Yeah.
You'll be fine.
Just, bring that bag in there and just, get out that hummus. Like, you're good.
There's the moment towards the end where it's after leaving the Lorraine situation where they're like 3 hours left, or it might even be less than that, or it might even be there's a moment towards the end where it's just like there's not any time left. I could kill 3 hours anywhere. Like it's in the subway is actually where it is. It's before they get to Lorraine's where they've killed the people with the weird dune buggy underground with the flamethrower. It's like, honestly, just stay in this subway for 4 hours. Half of it's already barricaded. You have a gun. It's a tunnel. You'll be fine. And they don't be fine. Instead they go.
Well, he had to go.
I know he had to go. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, in that situation, the thing is, like, I think there is something to be said for, like, maintaining active awareness and lines of sight. Like, anything that, like, preserves your situational awareness, probably for the best. Like, yeah, that plan of staying in the strategy, that, like, is staying in the subway, that's good. Except, what if another dune buggy crew comes through? You know what I mean? Like, you gotta, I sort of understand.
You'll hear them coming.
You'll hear them coming. You get on the other side of the buggy, they can't get to you.
I'd probably just be hanging out in, like, I don't know, Griffith Park somewhere. Like, just under the theory that I got a tarp. I'm gonna go to ground here and just keep an eye on things. That's probably me.
I'd be in my ambulance. I'd be that dumb jerk.
You're not allowed to go out.
In an ambulance,
you can't.
Trying to scoop some people up and
yeah, they said
be the
you
only
can't.
Can't. Medical assistance is banned. You'll be prosecuted. You're illegal.
What if I say that I'm actually just killing them slowly with
morphine
drugs or something?
There you go.
Kill them with kindness.
But I'm really saving.
You think the Griffith Park plan sucks, Natalie?
I think it really is. I would
you
go
just get hunted?
If it were me.
I think we should hold this question. I think everyone should think about this. We will open our next Purge podcast where I think everyone needs to think real hard about what they would do in this, like, hey, I just need to hide out. It's not like I'm going to my friend's place.
I was just talking about Los Angeles, places in Los Angeles.
Okay, well, do that.
But
okay, give me.
We can think about a larger plan.
Okay, everyone think about your larger plan. We're going to punt that to the next podcast where we'll be watching the Purge election year.
I have a question.
Yes.
Santa Monica Mountains.
Is the Purge a battle royale game?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
Because that will affect my decision on how to survive.
Fair. Okay. Yes.
We know you have feelings on that.
For the
every scene,
okay.
I'm like,
question.
Loot these guys. Loot them.
Loot and shoot.
Where
we drop him, boys.
Oh, God.
So spicy. We drop it at the top of Runyon, boys. We going.
I've been.
They
you
got
know what?
Good sights on everyone from here.
You know what? I love Runyon Candy. I went there all the time. All right. Well, that's going to do it. The next, we'll be watching. I think what we'll do, because we said we weren't sure how we were going to handle the rest of these podcasts, whether we were going to do individual discussions of Purge election year and the first Purge. So we'll announce what we're going to do. I say all of us, we should watch the election year, see if we feel like there's enough for a full discussion or if we want to mash those two together and do a double whammy of the last two in the film side of the series. So we'll announce exactly what we're going to do on Twitter in the future. But our thanks to Tumelo for our theme music. You can find more of Tumelo at Tumelo Makes. That's an actual two instead of writing it out. .bandcamp.com. That's Tumelo Makes.bandcamp.com. And you can follow him at Mellow Makes on Twitter, where he is in. I think he's really leaning into. He wants everyone to register to vote. That's like I went to his Twitter page today, and he was just like, "Register to vote." So go do that. Your deadlines are coming up. So
they really are. Some of them
today's
could be the day that we're recording
the day
this.
For several people.
Yeah. So
yeah, but it might not be you.
Might not
so.
Be you. And there's different deadlines if you want to do on. If you want to do a vote by mail or vote in person. So just do if you want to thank Mello. Go buy his music and also register to vote. You can keep all of us at waypoint.vice.com. If you enjoyed this or any other episode of Waypoint's many fine podcasts, it helps if you go and rate and review, or you do one or the other for any other podcast. This will eventually get spun off into its own feed, but for all of our podcasts, any rating or reviewing really, really does help. You can follow me at Patrick Klubik. Danielle, where can people follow you?
At Danielle or I.
Natalie.
At Natalie Watson.
Austin.
at Austin_Walker. And hey, don't stop recording your files because we have to clap again because I crashed and we need another clap at the back end.
Okay. Rob? Where can people follow you?
At Rob Zachney.
He was so mad about the fortifications. That's what it was. He was just mad about preparation.
All right. Well, thanks everyone for listening. I'm going to go to Whole Foods today. Like, you know, I don't know when this purge is going to happen. So I'm going to get my time in early. We'll be back.
It happens on March 21st because it's 3-2-1.
True.
Purge. That's a countdown.
One. Off to Whole Foods.